Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, which is a little longer than normal. Hope you guys don't mind. Evan's out today, so Brittany Mollis from That's What B Said, and Danny Cunningham, who you've heard on ESPN Cleveland, who used to work for a station up in Minnesota as well as on. We are going to talk all things Cavs, state of the Cleveland Cavaliers, basically diving into a bunch of different rabbit holes, including Kobe Altman, including Colin Sexton, playoff hopes, whatever kind of state of the Cavs things you want to hear about. I think a lot of them are covered on this show. Also, notable, Kobe Altman did speak to the media on Thursday. Not a ton of stuff in there. I think the most notable thing he said was that Jared Allen, sort of as you can interpret by them trading for him, is part of their sort of long-term plans. And the idea is, I think he said it best, is that you get him in now. It's easier to get him now and sign him and keep him in your team when you have him in-house and he's a restricted free agent versus having to chase him on a restricted free agent market. So worth noting there. But again, that's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
With the fifth pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Isaac Okoro from Auburn University.
Quarter on none, launches.
Good Sexton.
On the blow by. Both inside.
And off to Garland for three. Hey, knocks it down.
Drummond grabs it out, lets to Garland. Up top.
Cleveland, this is for you.
Join now. Kick Devin out. It's fun pod time. Joined by Danny Cunningham, Brittany Mollis. Guys, what's up?
Chris, how are you?
I have so many questions for you, Chris. I'm just exploding right now.
Well, the Cavs are actually interesting right now, and that's weird. And obviously, there's like one of the biggest games in Browns franchise history is this weekend, and that's obviously like the thing. But in terms of what's next on the Cleveland sports horizon, I think the Cavs are pretty clearly the second most interesting thing going on right now. The baseball team does what it's going to do, and we definitely do not need to talk about that.
Oh my goodness, that baseball team.
Yeah, that dumb baseball team. But
they're the worst.
The Cavs are interesting, and they just got Jared Allen, who I really, really like. We can talk about that. We're going to talk about Kobe Altman. We're going to talk about where they're at. But I want to know, just to set a baseline here, where do you both think they're actually are right now as a team? Not like where you think the plan is going, not in terms of what the actual like long-term outlook sort of is. What do you think they are right now? Because this is a 5-6 team, 5-5 team, I don't remember. But first in defense, 30th in offense. They've been absolutely ravaged by injuries. Like Kevin Love has played like 1.25 of a game. Darius Garland's missed 2 weeks. Colin Sexton has missed time with an ankle injury. Dylan Windler has the worst injury luck in the world, broke his hand in the first regular season game of his NBA career. That was delayed a year. There's all these things that have worked against them, and yet they're like still competitive. They're not folding. The defense, JaVale McGee literally said on Thursday that he expects the team to maintain a top 5 defense throughout the season. We'll see if that's actually true. But like there are expectations on this team. And I don't you whichever one of you wants to go first, just go. But what do you actually think this team is? Because I have a hard time. I think they're maybe a little more feisty than I would have thought, but I'm waiting for the shoe to drop and things to like kind of, because I just don't think the offense leads you to anywhere tenable right now. But that's also because of injuries. And I have a hard time sort of navigating all of this because it's also so mucky and there's just a bunch of other muck going on within this NBA season.
Yeah, and I think that the defense might be a little overinflated at one. Like, I don't think that when we look back at this ranking that's on, you know, January 14th as we record this, when we look back at this in April and May when the season ends, I don't think the Cavs are going to still be sitting at number one defensively. But I think offensively, it's hard to judge anything that's happened on that end of the floor because you've got guys right now, and really for the bulk of the season, I understand that they're 5-6, so the bulk of the season is 6 games. They've been without so many important pieces. When you've got the guy that can initiate everything. You have your 2 best passers haven't played for most of the season now in Garland and Kevin Love. Colin Sexton's missed a handful of games. And when you don't have him or anyone that can initiate offense really playing, and I understand, you know, even like Matthew Dellavedova was never supposed to be a big part of this team. But when Colin Sexton and Darius Garland are out and then Dante Exum is out before he's traded, you just don't have guards. And while we can say that, you know, Matthew Dellavedova is not good, just having a guard on the floor that can do those basic things like initiate an offense can make a guy like Isaac Okoro look so much better on that end of the floor than he has right now, because too much is on his plate. So I think it's hard to make a judgment on that end of the floor, but I like where they're at. I think that this is a good place for this team to be in this season, where your expectations, maybe it's to compete for, you know, that eighth spot in the playoffs, or I think in an ideal world, you finish 10th, you get that playoff experience with the play-in game, you lose, and then you win the lottery and you get Cade Cunningham. I think that that is the ideal season. And they're in a spot where, you know, yes, all of those things happening is probably a bit of a long shot, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And if you can give yourself a chance for that, it's a success.
Okay. First of all, who needs guards when you have like 30 big guys? It's go big or go home.
Okay, I'm gonna be a buzz. I was trying to save this, but the big lineup is whack.
Oh, Chris.
It's absolutely whack. No, look, I understand if you want to go to it and it's like Larry plus Kevin plus, like, let's just say Jared or Andre, and it's like, okay, we just need to get three of our best five or six guys on the floor at the same time, and we believe that Kevin and Larry can shoot it enough to like make this work. Like, I can see how you get there. The returns on it have just never been anything that I'm like, there's nothing underlying about them that make me think they're actually like a workable thing other than like a quirk. Like last year when they worked, the Cavs were shooting out of their minds on three pointers. Like it was like over 40% with those lineups on the floor. That's not going to hold. Their 3-point shooting this year started off them shooting like 40 something percent from three. It is like absolutely drastically fallen, and the offense looks like absolute dog shit a lot of the time, partly because of that. Now, again, if you want to get there and you're like, okay, our best five to win a game is the last 5 minutes is Colin, Darius, Larry, Jared Allen, and Kevin Love, and we're just going to ride with it and we're just going to make it work. I think that's like a thing that you can do this year. If it's a bedrock of your team for what you're building, like when Kobe Altman says on Thursday, like, you know, we're going to leave the, like, basically he's like, we want to resign Jared Allen. That's like the coded language he's using without being able to like outward say that. And he's like, you know, we don't know what Andre's market's going to look like. I've known him since he was 16, all this stuff, like not closing the door on resigning Andre Drummond. If they sign Andre Drummond and like give Jared Allen a contract, that would be like really, really weird and kind of dumb. You're already spending, like, even though Larry's contract really cheap, I think you're already spending like a lot of money on like on bigs, and if you go, like, I just think there's a limit on what you're getting out of this. But I think in the vacuum of this season, where like lineups are going to get weird, where you're going to have injuries, where things are going to go nutty, like maybe that's like get you through some stuff. But if it's a bedrock of your philosophy, I'm out. I also just want to see the Cavs play like smaller with like the guys they have, because I think even if some of the guys they don't have are optimal, like I want to see Isaac Okoro at the four. I want to see Larry Nance at the five with Isaac Okoro at the four, and I want to see what that looks like. Like, that's on my wish list much more than I want to see Andre Drummond, Jared Allen, and JaVale McGee play together.
Sure.
I don't want to see it. I just don't care.
No, I agree with what you're saying, and I think that part of the reason the big lineup can be a thing here is because, you know, while neither of these guys are Nikola Jokic or Arvydas Sabonis, Kevin Love's a pretty good passer for a big guy, and I think Larry Nance is at least an adequate passer, too. And that's what can make it flow offensively.
And Drummond is a good passer. That's one of the things I did not give enough credit for, that I think he's a good passer. And apparently Jared Allen's a good passer out of the short roll, although I haven't done the dive on that to sort of see if I think that's true or not. But that's like the read that I've asked have said like he's actually a decent passer out of the short roll, even if he's not passing guys open.
But I also think part of the infatuation with it is the fact that, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. hasn't played this year. If you've got another, you know, he's not small, but wing player available, you never need to go into that ultra big lineup because you just drafted another wing in Isaac Okoro, and having Okoro, Porter Jr., Garland, Sexton, and pick your fifth guy on the floor that's a big, that lineup is probably more conducive to winning in the 2021 version of the NBA than throwing out four bigs and a guard. That's just how the NBA is going to work right now.
But wouldn't it be fun just to see them all courted? I'm looking at this for entertainment, guys.
Yeah, okay, but if you see it from... Yeah, but here's the thing. You're going to see it on the court, and Dean Wade's going to be playing shooting guard, and Larry Nance's going to be playing point guard. And then, like, then they're not going to score for, like, 5 minutes, and you're going to be like, What am I doing here? It'll be really fun for about that minute, though.
No, it'll be glorious.
It's fun for the memes. It's not fun to watch.
No, it's fun to be on Shaq and a Fool.
It's not fun to watch the game.
It's when that is like the overwhelming bit. If you listen to any national NBA podcast this week and they talk about the Cavs, the bit is, do the Cavs need all the centers? Like, is that their roster play? That's like the whole bit.
With power forwards last year.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to ever be in the same conversation as the Knicks. Yeah. That's just like rule of thumb.
Whatever. You guys just don't get it.
No, I get it. You just liked Larry Nance's quote about the trees.
I did.
Look, if Larry Nance Jr. gets traded, like I'm more impartial, but I will grab my pitchfork and I will meet everyone outside of Rocket Mortgage.
Do you think that's a possibility?
I would be stunned.
Good.
No, but I think he's a guy that if I was like another team, I would be like, I would call about Larry because he's really cheap and he's really good.
I know teams did inquire about him this summer.
Yep, that was a thing.
I don't think that the Cavs are in any hurry to move him. I think he's on a good contract. I think that obviously he wants to be here. And there are going to be, there's going to be at least one big guy moved from the Cavs, probably two.
His name, well, the one name rhymes with Trumman and the other one's name rhymes with Begee.
Yes.
Those are the two.
Yes, but Larry Nance, I don't think, is going to be part of that conversation.
Okay, so let me ask you guys this. Kevin Love, making a lot of money, longer-term contract than Drummond, has been injured, has injury history. I see him put in the same category as Drummond. Is like, okay, what are the Cavs going to get for him? I get the timeline stuff. I don't know what to do with him, but I also think his utility is higher than people think. Is that nuts on your end? What do you do? What do you do with Kevin in all of this? Because I think he fits well next to Jarrett, but he also could like hurt his leg again, hurt his hand again. Like there's all these risks with him, and he's making lots of money. And like, how much does he still want to do what he's doing here right now? We don't exactly know that. I don't know which Kevin's such an interesting thing because I don't like, unlike Dre, I don't like, theoretically you could get like a second round pick or something for Dre, or maybe because he's playing so well this year, you could at least defensively you could get. A better pick out of that from the Hornets or someone silly. Are you getting that for Kevin? Probably not.
No, I think Kevin, because of his injury history, and you know, it's not history, it's current, because of his age, because of his contract, I think he's probably looked at as a negative asset across the league. Like, you're not getting off of Kevin Love without having to give something else up. And if you're the Cavs, it's not worth giving something up to get off of Kevin Love, I don't think. You don't necessarily need that cap space right now. What are you going to do with it if you get off Kevin Love, you know, a year earlier than you normally would? What difference is that going to make in the long term? I don't necessarily see that as something that is a necessity to become competitive again. Yeah, he's not worth the money that he's making. He's hurt all the time. It's not a great situation, but it's just not worth giving up something to move on from. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. I think he can still be successful in Cleveland. And I think that the fit with Jared Allen certainly will be a good one. And I like his passing ability in specific, because when you've got so many guys that can move the ball as well, especially when, you know, maybe your lead guard in Colin Sexton isn't as good at that skill right now as you would hope him to be, having a big guy that can pick up that slack a little bit helps. But he has to be on the floor for it to work. And it's kind of the waiting game for him to be healthy and then crossing your fingers that he can stay healthy once he gets there.
Question. Has his, like, do you guys think that his trade value has ever been lower, or do you think that it could get even lower than it is right now?
No, I think it's as low as it can get.
I think that it has been lower. I think that right after the contract was signed, it was probably a little bit lower than now, just because of the time left on that deal.
And he got hurt like not long after that. Like, yes, he got hurt that fall.
But like, it can't get lower moving forward than it currently is. It can only go up. But historically speaking, I think it has been lower in the past than it is now. So this isn't the lowest it has been, but it also can't get lower.
I don't think if you traded Kevin Love, you would get like, interesting.
Would it
stuff.
Be the worst thing in the world if he just like finished out his time in Cleveland?
No. That's where I'm at. And well, let's talk about that. We're going to take a quick break right back here from some lovely sponsors because capitalism, and we'll be right back. Leaving all that in. Are you ready for some football? Are you ready for NFL playoffs? Maybe the Browns game this weekend? if you're looking at betting on a prep, there's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust here at Locked On Caps. That's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code Locked On for your 50% welcome bonus. There are NFL games of the week. When college football season, they're the top college football games. The Cavs are obviously back in action on Friday. You can get the best odds for those games up to date at betonline.ag. And don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code Locked On to get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Also want to let you guys know about Locked On Bets 2020. Thank goodness is over. It's time for a fresh start and a few more wins. If you're betting this year and you want more wins, listen to Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They are picking college basketball, football, and NBA locks all winter long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get podcasts. All right, we're back. So this is my thing. Kevin, the Cavs are like 29th or 30th in three-point rate. They need Kevin Love last year led the team in three-point attempts, 7 per game. If there's one thing about Collins' scoring repertoire that leads you to be like a little hesitant about it, it's that he doesn't take a lot of threes. He just doesn't. I think a pull-up three, if he starts adding that to his game in some way, even if it's just a little bit more and turns the dial on that just a little bit, he gets way more interesting and the offense should get better and things will loosen up a little bit in good ways. And that shot's going to be there, whether it's with Dre, whether it's with Jared Allen. Like, the vertical spacing of Jared Allen is going to leave some stuff, especially with Collins' ability to get into the lane. I think he's going to have that shot open. I want to see him take it. But Kevin is your way to get three-point shooting because, like, Darius right now at least shoots it above or under a little bit under average for his position. Collin is, like, near the bottom of his position, like the bottom 5% of guards. And Larry is stretched about as far as I think you can put him as a three-point shooter. You know, and Isaac's not there yet. Dylan Windler, you know, we don't really know if he's like a real player or not yet.
He does exist. I saw him play one game.
And like, he exists, but it's like, is Dylan Windler, like next, at the end of next season, Dylan Windler will already be extension eligible at age 45.
Dylan Windler will be the first guy eligible on a rookie extension and run for president. Ever.
Unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable stuff for my guy, Dylan Windler. But like that's a thing you need. And Kevin is the only like proven guy that can do that on the roster. And also just like, look, the 2016 vibe can't last forever. It's going to whittle away at some point. You know, Deli's already sort of like halfway out of his career in a lot of ways.
Was Deli really ever in his career?
2016, oh, man. God. Peaking.
No.
Dude got an...
Deli fell out of the rotation and then signed for $38 million 3 days later.
Look, get the bag. Just get the bag at all times.
I mean, you had from that team, and I don't want to dive into the past year, but you had two guys that fell out of the finals rotation, signed for almost $100 million combined. Yeah. No. More than $100 million combined between he and Timofey Mozgov less than 2 weeks after they were out of the rotation in the finals.
Get the bag. That's to secure your bag. Secure the bag. Always secure the bag. I have Mitch Kupchak and
John Hammond.
Oh, Deli's not even long. That's funny. Just Kevin helps. To answer your question, I think it'd be fine. Like, is there like a diminishing? Is there a chance that like in 2 years or in a year? That like the best that Cavs best closing five is like doesn't involve him, but he's like still a starter and it's like weird because he's making a lot of money and like that's like a weird thing to navigate because he's Kevin freaking Love and everything. Yeah. Like if you get Cade and then your best five ends up being like or Suggs or Kuminga, whomever, and it's like you're not your top pick next year, Sexton, Garland, Okoro, that player, and then like one of Allen or Nance or something, like you're in a really good spot. Mm-hmm. But like Kevin Love is just gonna be like this really, really well-paid guy chilling there. And I don't feel like we know what he wants. You know? I don't feel like we actually do.
Yeah.
He can't come out and say, like, he can't do what Harden did because, like, no one is going to, like, give up a ton of, like, amount of pick swaps and picks to get Kevin Love. That's just not going to happen.
I mean, I think we've seen him try and force his way out.
Yeah, he said, find me, I'm rich, like, to the Cavs general manager.
Oh, my gosh,
like,
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
We've seen him try and do this stuff, and like it's just It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Yeah.
He's not good enough.
And he did it in Minnesota to an extent.
But he was a top five MVP candidate at that point. Yeah, he was worth the number one overall pick.
Yeah, he was at his apex at that point. And when LeBron James is like, I want to play with you, like you get to where you're going. So no, I don't think it's the worst thing. It'd be interesting to see how it plays out and how he adapts to that, because I just don't know. Is Kevin content? Like, Kevin got his bag, and he should, when he got offered that contract, he absolutely should have taken it, because like, why not secure as much money as you possibly can? Every player that gets offered obscene amounts of money that we make fun of for them being obscene amounts of money, we shouldn't be making fun of the teams that give them the dumb contracts, not the players for taking the money. It's not on the, like, let the players get paid. But like, is that enough? Is it like, is him as a person, and is that enough to kind of, make him happy in that sense? Or like, can he, or is like, or like, I would love to just like have him and Blake Griffin talk to each other about their current situations, because they're so similar in a lot of ways, although the Cavs are much better off than the Pistons. But there are these two like former all-star forwards who are like in really weird spots compared to some of their brother in the league. It's a weird place for someone of Kevin Love's ilk to be at this point of his career. It just is. But it's, I'm also pro Kevin Love, like taking spot up threes and setting screens for these young guards for the next like couple of years until like he, you know, his contract ends and maybe becomes like a mercenary of like cheap contracts, and or goes and like retires and just like becomes like, I don't know, goes like does like art photography for GQ or some shit. Like, I don't know. He can do whatever he wants. He's Kevin Love.
He's dating a supermodel. He lives the life.
He's got a Kevin Love is like fine.
He's
like
fine.
like I'm sure he would like to like be playing basketball and like not have like injured legs, but like pretty good life.
Pretty sweet. It's a good gig if you can get it.
Pretty good life. Yeah. But that's a big question. So what do you guys think of Kobe Altman?
Listen, I want to ask you guys a question. I have this written down. I was very excited.
Chris, but I want you to a question. Brittany goes, let me ask you a question.
Okay, no, give me. I want your take though. Until you cannot ask a question until you give me your take. And if your take is the question, then like that's fine, because that's something I would do and I respect the bit. But fire. I need some takes.
Well, I mean, I've always been very pro Kobe. I think that he.
Big Goldman Sachs person.
I don't know who you're talking about with that. I saw that Kobe today Altman, and I just Kobe didn't Altman, like say Kobe, anything.
Kobe Altman once gave like a very long speech, or not a very long speech, but you can go on the. I know this because someone sent it to me. He gave like a speech to like a Goldman Sachs like advisory board, and it's just like very funny because he comes from a finance background, and like Dan's the owner, and like the Cavs are just funny, and it's just funny to me that like you can go on YouTube and the most insightful interview I've ever seen with the Cavs GM is him talking to a bunch of like Goldman Sachs bros. It's just very funny.
Chris, capitalism, okay?
In my weird little brain,
capitalism. That's what we're living in.
Look, we have a lot of great sponsors, and I'm happy that they're feeding my bank account, so we're good.
So like me personally, I've always been very pro Kobe because I felt bad when he came here. His job, it just seemed like he was stepping into some very big shoes. And then to be the middleman between Dan Gilbert and actually like rebuilding and putting together a team that works, a team that, you know, could eventually be good again. I just thought that was a very hard spot to be in. So I've always like very much rooted for him. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, go pro Kobe. That's me. I have this thing that I always tweet, in Kobe we trust. I try to get people all hyped up for Kobe Altman. So that's my take. So the thing that I read today that I wanted to ask you guys about, I saw someone tweet, and let me get this right. They called Kobe Altman the master of flipping pieces until he ends up with something good. How do we feel about that?
Danny, why don't you take it?
So I don't know that I would call him the master at that, but I think he's made good moves on the margin. What? I think he's made good moves on the margins, and not all of them are moves that, you know, reap the benefits immediately, but you know, one of the good moves that he made very recently after or before Giannis signed the Supermax, like that pick became unprotected, and he got an extra second round pick from Milwaukee for letting that happen because he had to sign off on it. Like those things that largely go unnoticed. Like you find out you get a press release that says, oh, by the way, the Cavs get a 2026 second round pick. Okay. Yeah. No one cares. But when you accumulate enough of those, you can turn them into something. Like Kevin Porter Jr. was, I think, 4 second round picks and $5 million that they traded to, I want to say it was the Pistons, who got that pick from Milwaukee.
Yep.
Like, those things can happen because you do that. So I think he's very good at that. Like, the Dante Exum thing last year, where is Dante Exum going to be part of the future? Maybe as, like, a third or fourth guard on a small contract, but probably not. Instead, you flip him into someone in Jarrett Allen, who is definitely going to be part of the future. So I do think that he's made really good moves on that margins. While he hasn't found that franchise-level player that Ja Morant or whoever that, quite frankly, hasn't been available to them really in the draft. I mean, we could argue about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander versus Colin Sexton if we want to. That's where I was going to go.
I don't want to argue about it, but it's the one thing. But there was also a lot of stuff there where it was like, Shai was like, I don't want to play in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And the Cavs, I think, sort of rightly were like, okay, like, I think to some degree, like, we don't want to deal with this.
I think that the Cavs were looking for a little bit of good PR there because there was a sense that...
Well, it's why they nominate Colin Sexton for every single Player of the Week and Player of the Month award, because those are teams for different things. It's literally just like, if I'm Colin's camp, I'm keeping a Excel sheet of those, and when he becomes extension eligible, I'm saying, give me the max. You nominate me for all these awards against Giannis and Bradley Beal and every other great player in the Eastern Conference. Pay me my money. Oh, give me the full brimstruck. Also, because
Colin's just good, guys. But you know what? We'll get into that.
He is good, but... No, he's good, but like I'm saying, like if I'm using,
I'm gonna pause, I'm gonna make that like an alarm on my phone.
I've never thought that's concerning. I've never thought he was not good. I think there's just like there's a discourse around him that is fair, and then it gets like very toxic, and there's no nuance to it. Twitter also sucks.
Yes, agreed.
That's my flat out opinion because.
I think we got a little bit better last week.
Urban Meyer jokes, because I'm here for Urban Meyer and Shelly Meyer and Shelly Meyer jokes. I'm here for that.
Urban, great content. The picture of Urban Meyer today getting off the plane in Jacksonville. Like, the fact that they put down a little doormat at the foot of the plane was hilarious, and Urban looks like he's not been missing meals during the pandemic.
I would love to be rich for one day. Just one day to tap into that PJ. That PJ lifestyle.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Kevin Love also probably flies private at this point. Just saying. Very rich. Glad he signed his contract. But I think Danny's right, because the Dante Exum thing I think is a really good point, because like Jordan Clarkson was not going to be re-signed. There was clearly no reason he was going to stay in Cleveland. You get some assets back, and you take a chance on a guy like Dante, who's a former lottery pick, had some bad injury luck on a affordable contract, and has a skill set you can mold. Didn't work out. Obviously, he gets hurt not that long ago, and that didn't help things. And I hope he can find success in some way, because I think he has real NBA skills, even if he can't shoot. But like, you then take that contract, and you're able to push it with other stuff, and you get back Jared Allen. And I think there's things we can quibble about with Dan as an owner, but like, he is most of the time pretty willing to spend money. And like, part of the reason you're able to get the Jared Allen deal done is because you have the financial ability to eat the Torian Prince contract, right? That's an advantage, and like paying the money you did to get Kevin Porter Jr., whether that works out or not, like whether like he's in a weird situation and it isn't going to matter going forward is a whole other thing that is no one has like good answers about. But like you have the ability to say, okay, this is a guy that I know they had ranked much higher than 30th, if not like top 10, top 7 in that draft.
Sure.
And they spent the money when he was still there, and we're like, okay, we're going to go get him, and we're going to like try to make this work. And they're willing to do stuff like going and getting Lindsey Gottlieb. They've been willing to, like the succession plan stuff with JB and Beeline was always some bullshit, to be frank. Like, that was just some PR spin. But like, they were willing to pay JB Bickerstaff a lot of money to come in and be John Beeline's assistant. They did that with Ty and David Blatt, too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that I don't know that that's necessarily a Kobe thing. I think that might be an organizational thing, because of the history.
That's a good, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that they have that. And Kobe, I think, as much as, like, I think, I don't feel like we actually know how he thinks about things, because, like, he's barely ever talks, and when he does, I don't feel like we're getting, like, coherent visions. Like, I don't feel like we know what he thinks about analytics. I don't feel like we know what he thinks about... frankly, like, we don't know what he thinks about the COVID situation, other than sort of like the general organizational thing. There's like a lot of philosophical. Philosophical things. It's my Ohio University education coming through in the big right there.
Go Bobcats.
Yeah, go Bobcats. Best school in Ohio. That's not Ohio State. Ohio State sucks. Anyway.
thank you.
You guys are Notre Dame people, and I don't care about Ohio State. So
let me ask you this. Do you think that this trade happens, and maybe we can venture into Jared Allen here in a little bit, but do you think that the trade where they end up with Jared Allen and Torian Prince happens if Giannis doesn't re-up with Milwaukee this offseason?
Oh, man.
Because that's something that popped into my brain last night, because, you know, that pick that ended up going out basically to be able to get those guys is the Milwaukee first-round pick in 2022 that became unprotected, and which was done so Milwaukee could trade for Jrue Holiday. And if Giannis doesn't sign that Supermax, that pick lost a lot of value when that contract got signed in Milwaukee.
I wonder if the counter for Cleveland is like you highly protect one of your own picks.
Sure. Because but like I don't know if that gets it done.
No, I don't know. I don't know. It's a fair question. Because I think the reason you can trade that pick so easily is like Giannis signed the Supermax.
Yeah, that's exactly it in my mind. Yeah. Because if Giannis doesn't sign that Supermax, there's a chance that's the number one overall pick. Now, barring Jrue Holiday leaving and Chris Middleton getting hurt and Giannis getting hurt all at the same time in Milwaukee, which is just not going to happen, that pick's going to be 25 to 30.
Yeah, and that's just your hit rate on that's lower.
Yes.
It's a good thing to have, and like if you're Tilman Fertitta, it's very affordable labor.
There's the word you had to say, affordable.
Yeah. Tilman Fertitta writes his own jokes.
Can't wait to hear him on CNBC every week.
I have a friend who works there, and I troll him because I laugh when they have Tilman Tuesdays, and it's just very funny to me.
It's hilarious.
Kobe, I just want to know more about what he thinks about certain things. In the work, I think his overall work speaks for itself. I think the Kyrie trade, even though you get Sexton out of it, is sort of the one thing because like the return on that didn't age well, but he did turn into another stuff. Obviously ends up getting Larry, you know, via the jettisoning, you know, Isaiah and Jay Crowder and stuff. And you Jordan Clarkson comes through in that time. And then, you know, he turns into Dante, which feeds into this. So it all feeds into each other. And Collins, a bedrock piece, at least in broad theory. So
and George Hill turned it into the first round pick that they just traded to get Jared Allen.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, and you know, you're able to win that. Like you get Delly back in that too, is like some PR wins. Like they do a little PR stuff that I think is sort of smart because Cleveland's a weird town for basketball. And I think sometimes you gotta just do little funky stuff and kind of cater to people a little bit. I also just think like I hope he gets time to actually see this through. Whatever this is. I don't know what this is. I hope he gets time to actually, like, him and JB together get a chance to actually see it through, because there's not a thing in my lifetime that has actually been the Cavs trying to do something that looks like this and them actually taking the time to, like, get to the point where they want to hit the gas. And Kobe on Thursday said, we're not ready to put our foot down yet, basically. Like, we're not ready to go 150 on the freeway and, like, gun it now. We're still, like, cranking up, getting to where we're going to go. And I think that's right. But I think you're in a position, like, if you get Cade, and he's as good as advertised, or like maybe it's Kuminga or whomever else. I don't know. You could be in a position where like Jared Allen's going to be 23, Colin Sexton will be 22, Darius Garland will be like 21, Kevin Porter Jr. if he matters will be 20 or 21. Like even if Jetty, you know, kind of hangs around and Larry hang around, like they're still like Larry's like going to be like 28 and Jetty will be like 25. Like you have all these really young pieces, and if Cade's as good as advertised, even if he's not Luka or something, like getting a really good young player next year can help you like hit that gas pedal and get somewhere interesting. And I don't know what it looks like. I think the roster is going to change a lot in the next 12 months. I still think you're going to see it shaped and tweaked, but it's heading somewhere. And I just don't think in my lifetime, at least like maybe dating back to like, I was born in 93. So that's like the fringes of the Price era. Is there anything in that time that has been built that theoretically looks like it is right now? I can't think of anything. They tried obviously with Kyrie and Dion and Bennett, but then you go back and look at the transactions of that time, and it's like they had a summer where they signed Earl Clark, Jared Jackson, and Andrew Bynum, and had to give up draft capital to trade all of those players away that same season.
Yeah.
And then they fired Chris Grant
and
hired Mike Brown again.
And then fired Mike Brown again.
And then hired David Blatt. And then the only reason it all works out is because LeBron is like the balm that heals all wounds.
The fact that you guys can just remember all this stuff is amazing to me.
Look, I can tell you like where I was in the basement of Scripps Hall in Athens, Ohio before a 9 a.m. class when I found out Spencer Hawes got traded to the Cavs. I can explicitly tell you where I was. Explicitly.
And I'm still waiting for Jarrett Jack to tell us his news. I'm still waiting.
What a king! What a king!
I did see that I think he signed with the G League.
Oh, get him out of the Canton Charge bubble squad. Let's go.
I think I saw that.
Give it to me.
But I think that the reason we maybe didn't get to see those things through, and yes, they didn't make as many moves necessarily that made sense. And this is more specifically to the Kyrie, Deion, Tristan era of the rebuild, is that there was always hope on the horizon that there was going to be this savior coming that happened to be born in Akron. And that doesn't exist now. And I think that that has to change the organizational outlook. And I'm obviously not around the organization, and really no one is because of COVID, the way that, you know, other people have been before, even I used to be. But I'm curious how hands-on ownership now is, considering, and this is another question I'm curious about, is what's Dan's health like right now? Because he's always been a very hands-on owner, but he had a very significant health episode, having that stroke. And I don't think we've heard from him since, other than maybe one recorded video or something. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's a terrible owner, and yes, he does things that all of us don't like as an owner, but when push came to shove, he spent. So I have to give him credit for that. But I'm curious just what effect that has had on it too, because Kobe's the first GM under his ownership that got a second contract. And I think that there's hope that he's going to get to see it through because of a combination of everything I just laid out.
I don't think it's, we're going to take a break here in a second, last one, but I don't think like Kobe not being as media friendly as David Griffin was is not intentional.
Sure. Sure.
I think there's something to the idea that this is all being more close to the vest. That's interesting. All right. One last break. We'll be right back. Go behind the scenes of the game you love and get all sides of the story with the Rejecting the Screen podcast. Each week, Noah Kozlov and Adam Stanko get personal, interviewing players, coaches, media members, and all the people who make the NBA happen. There's a really, really great episode in particular with Jeff Zilgit about his battle with cancer in the feed right now that I highly, highly, highly recommend. Subscribe to Rejecting the Screen wherever you get your podcasts. All right, back. Last segment here. Also, I want to note on Dan, his son Grant is taking on a much bigger role. I don't think it's like basketball decisions necessarily, but like he was involved in hiring the artist Daniel Ashram. He was involved in the jersey stuff. Grant's getting more involved in the organization in a lot of ways.
Sure.
He's 22 years old, I think.
Yeah, he's
very young.
He's not going to have that same power Dan did, and well, no. Still does, obviously. Yeah. But with Dan maybe not being as hands-on with that power right now because of, you know, maybe he wants to take another approach to ownership, or maybe it's the health stuff. Who knows? That I
he
think
spoke like twice. Like I've seen him speak once. He did a CNBC thing when Rocket. Like Dan's rich. He can do whatever he wants to.
Yes,
the thing.
He
like,
has more money than anyone could ever dream of having. Like I think only, that after they went public, he became the second richest owner in the NBA behind Steve Ballmer.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so I'm gonna ask you guys this: whether it's Jared Allen, whether it's Sexton, I'm sure for Brittany it'll be Colin Sexton. The player you most want to see how it plays out over the next 12 months, who is it and what?
The next 12 months.
Next 12 months, next year. So like the end of the season into next season. Who do you most want to see how it progresses?
Well, okay, I know you think I'm gonna say Colin Sexton, but because he's already proven so much to us, I don't need to see how this play. I have a good feeling about how this is gonna play out.
The multi-time player of the week nominee.
Danny, I remember listening to Danny on ESPN Cleveland, and they were talking about the Cavs, and he said, you know, I think there's a universe that exists where Colin Sexton is really good, but like
an all-star.
Which he might be. The way he's playing right now, he might be.
It exists. That universe exists.
We're in that universe. This is not a simulation. Colin Sexton is on his way to be an all-star.
Look, all I'm saying is All-Star Game 2022, I would bet my life savings that the Cavs are going to campaign their ass off to get someone in that All-Star game.
It almost has. Well, him or Isaac.
He would be the odds on one, but it would be like if Kevin's around, like you could definitely see a push for Kevin if he posts up good numbers. But like they have an All-Star game in Cleveland next year. You can bet your ass that they want to have someone in a Cavs uniform in that game.
So it's not Colin Sexton over the next 12 months. I'm totally happy with the way things are progressing, the way they've progressed since 2018. I think we're seeing a totally different player, just works really hard. Couldn't be prouder of him. The person that I've been the most excited about consistently, not as loudly as I am for Colin Sexton, but Kevin Porter Jr. I think he's the most exciting, and he has been. So I want to see what happens if he plays, what goes on with him, if he can contribute in big ways, because I feel like he can. So that's the one that I'm most concerned and most excited for.
Danny,
the thought of Kevin Porter Jr. crossed my mind too, Brittany, and him not playing so far this year makes that just a little bit cloudy, and it does, I think, tamper down my excitement for him, because if he's not on the court, we're just not going to know, and that excitement doesn't matter. But I'm someone that was very high on Darius Garland coming out of Vanderbilt in that draft last year, and I don't necessarily care about anything that happened last year, because if you look at his college career, played 5 games at Vanderbilt before tearing his meniscus and having to have surgery and missing the rest of the year. So you essentially had a 19-year-old kid last year with the Cavs playing out his freshman season of college basketball in the NBA. That's not going to be a recipe for success for anyone that's not, you know, Luka Doncic or LeBron James or just someone of that kind of caliber. But I still think that the future is incredibly bright for him. I think that as he kind of gets his legs under him, which I think we saw before he hurt his shoulder this year, and even towards the end of the Cavs season last year, he shows flashes where he can be really, really, really good. I don't know if he's going to be all-star level or a notch below it or maybe a notch above it, but I think that he's got a pretty high ceiling. Maybe not the highest ceiling on this team, but with his passing ability and his willingness, and I think his outside shot's going to continue to get better and better, he can be one of the guys on the floor. He better be one of the guys on the floor in closing minutes for you if you're going to be successful. And I think how good he's going to be able to be is going to be a pretty good barometer of how good the Cavs are going to be able to be in the next couple of years.
Look, you notice when he's not playing that the passing isn't there with the offense when he's not on the floor.
Well, I think he's not the best player on this team, because that's pretty clearly, I think, Colin right now. But he's the guy, I think, that is the best at making others better. And that's something that the Cavs miss when he's not.
That's a good point. I like that.
I think that's a good way of putting it, because I think Darius is the guy who is like willing to throw lobs a little more aggressively to others. He's the guy who's not like always shot hunting. And I kind of want to see him shot hunt a little more. He has that ability to do that kind of, this is sort of sacrilegious to say this, so I apologize, but it's like he has a little bit of that Damian Lillard 3-point pull-up energy to his game when he wants to.
Sure.
I want to see him take more of those, because I think that that's going to open things up in a lot of other ways too. But he's the connective tissue, and since there's no Dante X, I'm like, is Damian Dotson sort of the backup point guard? And like that, you're putting more stress on Larry to pass, and Colin's going to have to take a step forward in that way. My answer is Isaac Okoro, because the defense is just, I'm a sucker for defense. I'm a sucker for, like, I love the Colin. The first year of his career, he did not fight through screens ever. He just died.
But Chris, he had that summer league highlight.
That's the greatest highlight of all time.
And that's the only reason anyone thought he was good defensively for even a split second.
That's how dumb we all are. Right, I love it so much.
Yeah. Oh my God. I miss summer league though. No lie.
That's the best.
Oh man. But Isaac fights through screens. He knows what he's doing on defense. Even if he's still a little robotic in how he moves some ways, he just has this ability to help on defense in a way that's really rare for a rookie, and he just knows what he's doing, and I'm just yes. This is just an ingredient this team didn't have. And a thing I like about all the young guys they have so far is that I all think they're all helping each other out in some way. A reason I really like the Jared Allen addition is because Drummond's been really good this year, and he's been much better than I would have thought. And I was very down on what he was doing, but I think he's done a lot that has helped. And I don't think he's been helped by the Cavs setup, because he's has no space to get inside and shoot. He's just hounded at the rim all the time, and that's not going to empower him. Jared Allen's a vertical lob threat in a way that Drummond is not. And he's a better screener than Drummond, I think. And he's going to just be able to do some stuff in that way that's going to loosen things up with that vertical spacing in a way that Dre does not. To get Andre successful, you almost have to get him moving as a cutter more so than a lob threat. And with Jarrett, you can just spread the floor with Colin. Colin brings the ball up and you can put, you know, like Darius off to one side and another and Kevin on to one side and, you know, Larry or whomever on the other side. And you can just run a spread pick and roll with Colin and Jared Allen, and you're going to probably get a good shot out of that against most teams. And it's going to help Colin understand how to run that more effectively and manipulate those screens with the ball in his hand and know when to drive in and throw the lob and stuff. Like, it's going to help in some ways. And Jared Allen's also just like in terms of shot blocking, like Dre is probably more active with his hands in terms of deflecting passes and everything. But Jared's going to like actually protect the hell out of the rim, and behind two smaller guards, if that's the way you're going to go, he's going to empower them and Isaac's going to empower them. And I think a thing I like is that even though the Cavs have not drafted for fit, so to speak, they haven't drafted need and fit, so to speak. Like, I think they've taken chances. Like, Darius was clearly not like the obvious need. Like, you could have gone different directions, but you went the guy you really liked. All the things they're adding seem to fit really well together. And yes, like, it looks weird now because there are seven bigs on the roster and like you're not healthy and all this stuff and you can't score points. Like the Jazz game, oh my god, like the offense is broken because they don't have anybody healthy right now. But I think once the roster cleans itself out and the core is like Sexland, Okoro, Jared Allen, and maybe it's Jetty and Larry as sort of like your kind of swing bench pieces or something, and then you get like your rookie in next year and you figure out, and you maybe Torian Prince hangs around for a little bit because he's at least a decent player. Like, you have the makings of like an actual cohesive vision to a roster, and that's like really abnormal for the Cavs.
Yeah,
that's just like really abnormal for the Cavs that they have a roster that should all empower each other and do stuff. But like, you could pick any of the players and you could be like, this is the one I want to see how it plays out the most over the next 12 months. And I think it'd be, like, stands for, like, Windler, I think it's a fair answer.
Yeah,
Kevin Porter Jr., like, I don't know what's going on. But if he comes back and torches teams, like, great. Like, his game against the Heat last year, maybe yes. The most impressive performance of any young Cavs player last year. It was incredible. But we don't know what's going on with him, really.
I think the most interesting question is, who has the highest ceiling of that young guys? Because talking about earlier when I was grouping, you know, Porter and Sexton and Garland together, I think that of those three, Porter probably has the highest ceiling, certainly the most variance, but does Isaac Okoro have a higher ceiling than him? I don't know. I think he might, but I'm not positive yet.
Do you guys know who his, the in terms of the numbers, who his most comparable college comparison is?
I do.
Are you guys aware of this? It's Kawhi Leonard.
I could understand that.
And that's like outrageous. Like, that's like the top 1% of outcomes for Isaac, obviously, yeah. But like, the advanced numbers, that's his most comparable thing. But the good news about it is, like, all of his comparable seasons in terms of what he did at Auburn are, like, most of them are actual NBA players that are pretty good.
And I didn't want to make that direct comparison when I was writing about the draft stuff for Complex, because
it's not fair to him, yes, to be like, he's going to be Kawhi.
It's not fair to him. And earlier in the process, I wasn't as high on him as I was towards the end of the process. Like, I think I ended up having him go sixth in my final mock draft, but earlier in the process I had him, you know, 11-12. Well, the Spurs pick 11, and profile wise you know, he's already a really good defender. I thought he was the best wing defender in his class, but if they could figure out his jump shot, he could be a special player. And I still feel that way about him. I just think that the likelihood of him being a good offensive player is higher now than I thought it was, say, in, you know, June. But because it was the Spurs, it was just that lazy, easy comparison that you could make. But yeah, that's the guy that you know, hope and pray that he can become. I don't necessarily think he'll get to that level, but if you have to look at this roster and say, who is the most likely to be an all NBA player, it might be him, just because he's already really, really good on one side of the floor. And he's already really good at some things on the other side of the floor. But if he can get that shot down, he is the best player on this team.
All right, guys, let's end here on one last question. When you think about the Cleveland Cavaliers right now, in terms of what they are, where you think they're headed, whatever, give me an adjective that describes where they're at. Is it just any adjective you want? Mine is very quite simply, it's going to be two words because I'm cheating, but it's my show because I kicked Evan off for today, so I can do what I want. It is surprisingly competent, because I did not think that they were going to just be able to be normal for like It's just not in their DNA to be a normal franchise.
No, and you thought it would take them
and like they are right
to
now
get to how they're playing right now. I did. I thought it would be like another year or two.
The defensive effort. Well, like I think the defense is gonna like crater at some point and like fall to like 15th. Like I think that's probably where it ends up. Like 13 to 17 somewhere in there. Like the fact that they're like playing this well in defense and everyone is trying is like sort of wild to me. Like it's wild. Like this was not the case last year. And JB Bickerstaff, I think, deserves a lot of credit for that. I think he's a good. I think like he's a good coach. And some of the things that were knocks on him coming out of Memphis in terms of not wanting to play young guys have not carried over to Cleveland, where like he doesn't have to worry about like Marc Gasol and Mike Conley and kind of in a grit and grind. Like he kind of seems like he has carte blanche to kind of play the young guys, and he's being empowered to do so. And I think that that's important. But the Cavs have just never really been a normal organization. And like I was bracing for them to take Toppin, and I would have listeners can see this. Danny's shaking his head. I am with that. To me, would have been like an outright galaxy brain stupid pick.
Yes.
And Okoro is like a modern forward who the team has never quite had. Like sends like a certain guy that wears number 23, and like that guy's one of one. Okoro is the right kind of player to take to like fix yourself, and like. Toppin would have like I would have had to watch Larry Nance, Dean Wade, Obi Toppin, Larry Kevin Love, and Andre Drummond play minutes together. I would have walked into Lake Erie.
Well, Toppin, I hate to say this because you never want to see this or whatever, but Toppin getting injured and missing a significant chunk of time in a shortened season really hampers his Rookie of the Year possibilities, and I think playing for Tibbs probably does too in New York. But him, the worst case scenario was him winning Rookie of the Year for the Knicks. And not because it would have made it the wrong pick, because I still think passing on him was the right thing in the long term, but because
he is Michael Carter Williams Rookie of the Year.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it was. It's like, well, yeah, he's certainly not the best player in this class, but I could see him winning Rookie of the Year just because he's Dylan Windler's age already, essentially, and he's super bouncy, but he's going to be a bright flame that burns pretty quick, and that's not what the Cavs need. But it would have been a PR nightmare. It's like, oh, they passed on the Rookie of the Year, a kid that played his college basketball in Ohio, like one seed in the NCAA tournament before it got canceled. Dayton was going to win it all. How do you pass on this kid? Like, it just would have been a PR nightmare that wasn't worth it, where in the long run, the Cavs made the right pick.
Absolutely. Adjectives seem hard, so we're going to skip that. But I'm asking you guys this. Play in tournament or not? For this team, are they one of the top 10 teams in Eastern Conference and
yeah, spot? I'm gonna say yeah. Why not? You know,
I'm
2021. Anything could happen. Look at the Browns. Cavs are gonna ride that wave. We're good.
Look, if
I'm going to say no.
Oh, Jesus. Every time I have like a great idea or like I get too excited about something, he immediately just brings me down.
And that's why we work. That's what relationships are. So I'm going to say no, because right now is when the Cavs should be winning a lot of games. If you look at their schedule closer to the end of the first half of the schedule or whatever, how the NBA did it, things get really, really, really difficult. And this was kind of supposed to be the time where they were supposed to, you know, maybe start off the season at 8-5 or whatever through your first 13 games. But all these injuries happening now really puts a damper on the time where they should be able to win games. And yeah, they have that great defensive rating right now, in part because they just haven't played a lot of really good teams. When, you know, Utah came into the building, I understand the Cavs being beat up has a drastic effect on this, but they saw a real playoff team and they got smoked. And because of just how tough that schedule gets down the stretch, I think they're going to end up finishing 11th or 12th in the East, which is, I think, a direct result of what's happening right now with the injuries.
You can't just you know, you can't just say yes and then like get mad when we say no. So why do you think it's yes?
Because I think that what we're seeing right now is a plan coming together with a very good, solid young core. Why not? Like, I... Why? You know me. I'm just an optimist. So top 10 in the East, fair. I mean, it's doable. If Danny says 11, 12, it's not that far off.
They're 11th right now with Toronto below them and the Wizards below them, with the Wizards having Beal for now. And then the Raptors, obviously, just are the Raptors a better, kind of a more stable team. Here are the teams. It's Boston, Milwaukee, Philly, Indiana, Orlando, Brooklyn. By the way, the Cavs play the Nets, and like, and assuming that game happens, because who knows what's going on right now. Like, things are, like, the Cavs may lose these games against the Wizards next week. Yeah. The Cavs not only have a situation where the games could get postponed because of COVID, but they're going to be in D.C. like right around inauguration time. And like, whew. I like, Danny and I were talking about this before we started recording. It's like, I don't know geography of D.C., but just being in that city when things could be cuckoo just seems like suboptimal. Not great, Bob. But like, you're in a situation where, like, I think they're going to be closer to, like, maybe they're being better than the Bulls. And I don't really think the Knicks are all that good either. And the Knicks get a lot of, like, oh, the Knicks are competitive again or whatever. But
Listen, it's been difficult for the Knicks for a long time. Let them have these 2 weeks.
Like, a happy Jason Concepcion, AK Network on Twitter, would just, like, bring me make me want to go on Twitter again.
That's what I was going to bring up. Just let him have these 2 weeks.
Let James Dolan just get some good riffs in his band. Just have some vibes. But,
yeah.
Like, I think next year is realistic, I think. I'm talking myself into it.
By some miracle, I am correct, you have us back on the show? Is that, like, playoff time?
You guys can come on. You can come on. You guys are going to come on before that. That's a fact. But, like, the other thing is, like, I want the Cavs to, like, I want to see what happens if they get Cade, Kuminga, Jalen Suggs, whoever they can get in this draft, add another really interesting young piece and get, like, a top five pick, and then take that guy, apply them into this team, and then see where he goes. I want to see that versus, like, the other option.
Yeah,
And that's, like, I don't want to tank, but it's, like, the Browns aren't where they are if they don't get Baker.
No, you're right.
If they don't get Denzel Ward, if they don't accumulate the string of good young players, you can't get to where you're
going. I don't think you have to necessarily tank. I think that it is possible. We saw it a couple years ago with, you know, these new the new sets of lottery odds. It's possible that, you know, Brittany, they do finish 10th and they lose that play-in game and they're out, but they're still in the lottery for the number one pick. So they still get that little bit of playoff experience that, you know, Memphis got last year.
That's ideal. That's what we want.
Yes. Yes. The ideal
I would like to see Colin in a meaningful game. Yes. I would like to see Colin, like, have to go through that a little bit. It would be good for him.
And hopefully, you know, they lose it and they get a 10% chance at the number one pick or whatever it is, and they get that pick.
There you go.
Like, that's the dream, is to get one game of playoff experience, lose a nail-biter of a game, and then draft Cade Cunningham or whoever you want at number one overall.
If anyone deserves this, it's the Cavs. That's what I'm saying.
If anyone deserves to win the draft lottery, it's the Cleveland Cavaliers.
They were left in ruins. Like, a tornado just went through after LeBron left, and then they just have pieces.
Got a title out of it, though. You know, they get a title out of it. Could have won two without KD. The 2017 Cavs team is just outrageous. I also just, like, I enjoy when people get, like, I enjoy, we didn't even talk about this, but I enjoy when people get mad at Cleveland. Like people said Jared Allen lost this trade, and that's just stupid, because I in my head, I'm just like, you people, I sent a very specific picture of my feelings about that in our setting this up with Baker Mayfield photo. I think it's funny when people have to get annoyed when Cleveland has success. Like, when Bill Simmons loses his mind when the Cavs, like, get a high pick or something, or, like, it's so funny. It's so funny to me.
I want to touch on that Jarrett Allen thing, because I did see a little bit of that, you know, going around the Twitter sphere from some national pundits yesterday, saying that, you know, they feel bad for Jarrett Allen or whatever. And whether that's because he has to go from Brooklyn to Cleveland or whatever, because he's now on a team with, you know, 800 big men, whatever their reason be for it. I felt bad for him in Brooklyn. I kind of fell in love with the Nets when they were really bad and when the Cavs had that pick, because, you know, Kenny Atkinson and just that group of guys was fun to watch. It was fun basketball, even though they weren't that good. And for whatever reason, I take a liking to those sorts of teams from time to time. But
for sure,
Jarrett Allen was the best center on that team. But because DeAndre Jordan was a better friend, DeAndre Jordan got preference. Jarrett Allen's not going to have to deal with that anymore. He is not going to be treated the same way. Sure, he's not competing for a title now the way he was 48 hours ago. But he's in a better situation for his career. he's going to have the opportunity to shine in Cleveland in a way that he wasn't going to get in Brooklyn because DeAndre Jordan was there. And DeAndre Jordan, despite being not the guy that DeAndre Jordan once was, is still the guy that's really good friends with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And that stuff matters in the NBA.
Jared Allen's also about to get paid.
Yes, that too.
He's going to get like $90 million.
Yes, that also matters, and I won't feel bad for him.
And if anyone wants to come to – I volunteer myself. Anytime people come through Cleveland, I will happily tell you where they're good. There actually are good restaurants in Cleveland. You just have to like not look at Yelp and Google for 2 seconds and then complain. Yes. It's annoying. It's really annoying. Cleveland's great.
I love Cleveland.
The best.
Yeah, Cleveland's great. Like, yes, am I biased? Yes. But is
You're
it great?
To be.
Also, yes. Exactly. It's going to be fun. Cavs are second most competent organization in the city. Guys, this is a lot of fun. Heading into Browns Chiefs. How you feeling?
How about you just calling, I assume you called the Browns the most competent organization in the city.
It's not the Cleveland baseball team.
Oh, that's for damn sure.
Look, like for all the quibbles you can have about Dan and their things and your Kobe or whatever, or the Browns being the Browns are like playing the Chiefs this weekend. Kevin Stefanski is like an absolute god, and like they're in a really good position, and that's fun. They're actually competent. And it's weird. It is very weird.
I'm so excited.
The Onion thing where it was like the Browns fan thinks they're gonna blow the lead still is just like
three
very
days
very
later,
good stuff
Browns
from the Onion. 3 days later,
well, I mean,
it's very relatable.
Kind of still feel like I'm in a dream a little bit, and like Sunday night was incredible. I think I tweeted at one point, just am I dead? Because they went up 28-0. I'm like, am I alive? Am I dreaming? Am I dead? Like, what is going on here?
How are you guys feeling? You think we're going to win this weekend? You think that's a possibility?
I think it's possible, but I think you need some luck. But last weekend was just like all the luck. And I think it's possible. I mean, like, I think Baker plays really well again, and the Chiefs defense isn't great, and you can run the ball. Like,
that's going to be the key.
Why not?
Being able to run
it's possible. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily pick them, Brittany.
You know what? You guys have to listen to That's What B Said tomorrow, because I'm going to give you all the keys to victory.
Yes, I was going
right,
to say, I know
right.
you're going to
okay.
pick them yeah. in, as all soon right. as you record your podcast right after this.
All right, or give us the plugs, guys. Get you out of here. Give us the plugs where people can find you on social if they aren't already, and if they want to just see Brittany like destroy people.
Why not? If you want to see me destroy people online, you can find me at Bird's Eye View. It's BURDSIVUE. And once or twice a week, you can hear me on That's What B Said. It's a Cleveland sports podcast with two fabulous ladies. So that's where I'm at.
You can just kind of find me on social at Real D Cunningham. I'm not really doing much by way of content at the moment. I'm on ESPN.
We're changing.
Well, hopefully. I'm on ESPN 850 once in a while. I don't know if that's going to be more of a constant thing. We'll see. But yeah, I'm around. I make jokes on Twitter. I tweet about things and try and get people to laugh. And try and get Brittany to give her Ohio State takes.
I'm not giving my Urban Meyer takes. I can't do it.
Give your Urban
Meyer
takes.
The Bucknuts harass me. They terrorize me. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, we're... yeah.